Yeah, I think I've really sort of, in my mind now, I can really see how the primary teachers could sort of bring that into their school. Because like you say, if you did it as an after school club, you can literally just, depending on how many instruments that you have, you could just do it as a small club just to get those people involved. And then once you're au fait with how it's working and you get the kids really engaged, you can then expand through there. You know, your fundraising for whatever it happens to be through that year, you know, you can get more computers if you need more specific computers or more keyboards or more guitars or whatever that might be. And yeah. I hadn't quite realized the whole wider opportunities angle, which is a fantastic idea, because of course that works exactly as you just described it. You know, if they're doing a Samba project, the music service or the trust or whoever's part of the hub that's organizing it brings in a van load of instruments and leaves them for the 10 weeks, and the same if they're a bunch of ukuleles or strings and that kind of thing, all of which are available to hire. So actually this is just exactly the same thing, an extension of that, except it would come in with keyboards, like say drum pads, guitars, whatever it was that they were going to be able to provide, and also be able to give those lessons as well, so you have that sort of specialist knowledge of what's going on at that point as well, which is also fantastic, I think, for the teachers, because certainly from the wider opportunities Samba things I've done, it always works much better when the teacher's heavily involved, because not only then are you delivering the music and they get the kids are getting the opportunity to perform, but also the teachers are learning as well. And then once the 10 weeks are finished, all your wider opportunities have actually had the have finished their course, you're then still in a position to then carry on yourself in whichever form that you can. And that whole idea of being able to grow from just a starting point, I think, is a really key point.
I think it is. I think, you know, just making a couple of notes whilst you were speaking there, Mark, I mean, I think the interesting thing for me there is about sustainability. So we know that public money is scarce. We know that resources are tight. And we know that the best investment in our schools is the sort of 80% of a school budget that is invested into teachers. There's, you know, that's without a doubt, all of the proof indicates there that it's about the quality of teaching. So bringing the teachers on board, not trying to replace them with some, you know, gizmo fancy technology nonsense, that's crazy. What it's about is actually providing a resource in the hands of a teacher that enables them to deliver more opportunities in different ways. And I think the wider opportunities as was, I'm not entirely sure we're allowed to say that anymore, are we? I think it's the first access.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, that sort of first access is really interesting, isn't it? Because I think one of my fears in the lots of project-based work that started to come out of the Music Manifesto, for instance, didn't provide the kind of legacy and progression, you know, sustained and supported progression that people like Dick Hallam really, really wanted. You know, how do we build these sustainable models to enable a child to pick up a musical instrument and then continue their musical education for years? I mean, we've got this kind of strange tension in the National Plan for Music, not wishing to get political here, but where they've reduced the requirement to 10 weeks. You know, every child should have 10 weeks at primary school. And we know it was hard enough to sustain that musical progression when we were really looking for a year's worth of education. So you need to have something that is affordable and can be delivered, not this year, but also next year for another cohort of children, and that they can take those skills and build on them. And what I really love to see is that, yes, children do are drawn to guitars, bass, keyboards and drums. There's no doubt about that. But when they get the music service teachers coming in, like we have in Luton. So in Luton, music service do a fantastic thing with a guy called Phil Knight, who's a guitarist. He goes into a school called Sundon Park Junior School. And he teaches, and I think it's 3 years of students. So they get GigaJam on whichever instrument they want, and they can vary that for 3 years. But what happens, and has happened time and time again in other schools, is when a student starts to feel encultured in music, in other words, they can play something, they get that confidence to actually go, actually, I'd quite like to learn the trumpet, or I really like the idea of the trombone, or the violin, or whatever. And I remember in the early days of when we did a lot of work with Tiverton High School, that the big message that came back is, because children have had a chance to learn to play a musical instrument, this happened to be through GigaJam, but you know that, you know, there are others, delivery models, etc., that goes on. That child then actually felt musical. as a result of it. And the surveys that built into the Music Manifesto research that has backed up all of the progress that we've made in music education is very much about giving children that opportunity to experience music hands-on. And that hands-on for some people we know is about learning a musical instrument. For others, it'll be about going to see music being performed, etc. But for very many, in the classroom on a wet Tuesday afternoon, it's about doing something interesting and being active and being involved and being supported in that with their teacher, the person that they, you know, they have the most trusted relationship with. If music services are involved in that as well, then you've got this wonderful, cogent musical structure for a workforce all coming together to support the pupils. So I have always seen it that way. And as I say, we have those examples of those different models with music services coming in and supporting schools, as well as schools operating entirely on their own.
Yeah, and what I would hope would happen with this, as the conversation's going on and the knowledge that we're learning here, is the fact that as a teacher, you do have access to money for music in your school. And actually going to your music hub and saying, look, I've heard of Giga Jam and I've heard of this. And, you know, we do some singing in school. We've done some recorders, maybe some ukulele. We're looking to take it to the next level. We don't necessarily have an orchestra yet. We don't have any other instruments going on, but we think we can encourage more people and do some whole class music. And can you provide this? And actually, there should be a way of certainly opening that dialogue, I think, to see how you can go about that. Because, like I say, that expansion and that working together, which is exactly why the music hubs were created, is what we're after. And I think, actually, if you can't necessarily do it through that music hub, certainly opening that dialogue is a good place to start. And then even if you can get access to the money that you're entitled to as a school, you can then go about doing it on your own, which I think would be a really interesting thing as well, because there's obviously enough support and enough people around to be able to help you do that outside maybe of any of the music services that aren't willing to provide those things. So, the other thing I'd ask you about is, if you've got this course which is sort of within the classroom that the teachers are coordinating, can the children also do it on their own at home? If one of the children really think, I'm really loving this, but I want to keep going, but there's not enough time within the class time that they have, can they expand that themselves individually?
Absolutely. The key part of Giga Jam is very much about breaking down boundaries as much as we possibly can. So there was this, you know, all the buzzwords of the early 2000s was about, you know, cross-boundary education. The realities of that are quite varied, I think. But the truth of the matter is that Giga Jam students in schools where there's Giga Jam operating have access to Giga Jam anytime, anywhere, on any device. Although it's best on a Windows machine, Giga Jam is delivered through a browser. So, you know, if they've got a mobile phone, a tablet of some description, they can still watch all the videos. They've got exercises that they can play along with. They have access to all of that material anywhere, on the bus, in their bedroom at home. And that's a big thing for us. That's really, really important. And that kind of free at the point of access is a critical element. I remember Leonora Davis talking about this, that, you know, children should be able to have the opportunity to learn to play a musical instrument free at the point of access. Of course, somebody pays for it, but if we're going to actually equalize opportunity and chance, then we need to make sure that people can have access to this. So, yeah, at school and at home, and our license model is a very, very simple one for schools. If you buy a license, everybody can use it at school, at home.
Fantastic. And so that takes us nicely into, you know, what is the license cost? How is there someone listening out there who thinks this is a great idea, I'd like to find out more about it. What is the license cost, and what sort of fee are the school looking to have to invest in it?
Okay. So what we're doing increasingly now, because of, you know, budget constraints, is we're actually just simply talking to schools about how much they can afford to pay. But based on, predicated, it's not just how much can we squeeze out of it, it's the opposite. It's our business model is based on £1.50 per pupil per year at school and at home. Now, that's a relatively small unit cost, but actually some schools are very big. So that number can start to add up. So say, for instance, if we talk about an average size secondary school, you're talking about 1,000 pupils. So you might be saying, right, okay, there's a bill of £1,000 for everybody to be able to have a go. Well, that's absolutely fine. You know, £1,000 to £1,500. That's absolutely fine. But some schools, there's absolutely no way they can afford that because of the way their budgets are chopped up. And I understand that. So I would like a head of music to say, listen, actually, realistically, I want my year nines to do this because I want some of them to be converted to doing music next year. Or they may say, I want to support every child that comes in at year seven. Or I want all of Key Stage 3 to do it, for instance. So I've got secondary schools with licenses of £150. I've got secondary schools with licenses of £1,500. So it depends upon what that head of music wants to do, how they are funded themselves. Do they have access to development bids and funding that enables them to go as big as possible? Or are they really reliant upon the budget is as constrained by their photocopying costs as anything else? And I think, you know, heads of music would understand that. So based on £1.50 per pupil, give me a call is what I would say. And what we also do is for music hubs is we do licenses which says, look, every school can have access to this. So you can actually provide that for every school. So part of what you do could be simply, if you can't reach every single child in your borough or city or county, what you can at least do is provide them with GigaJam, free at school, free at home, wherever they are. And we discount that to about 80% of the cost. And that's based on the size of their grant. And again, it's based upon a sensible conversation about affordability.
So the most important thing for people listening to remember is that they need to go to gigajam.com and find your contact details and have a conversation. And I think the model of kind of, like you said, £1.50 a child is the fact that if you're really completely struggling and there is no money anywhere, certainly speaking as a parent, you know, if it's something the school is really wanting to invest music as part of your child's education, even asking the parents to pay £1.50 is not the end of the world based on all the other things that we pay for various clubs, various trips and all that sort of thing. And while it's another cost, it's a cost which I think is well worth investing if you get to the point that you have no other alternative as well. And I think, but with, like you said, with the options of music services and hubs being involved, the idea of actually being able to start small and grow and get every child involved, I think it's great value, and I think that it's definitely a conversation to have, and I hope many people do get in contact and just sort of open that dialogue with you.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, I think it's, I remember in the early days I was criticized quite heavily for trying to be too worthy in what we're trying to do, but actually the business has always been about trying to provide instrumental tuition to all of the 8 million pupils in our schools, free at the point of access. It's not a crazy amount of money. It is sensible amount of money. But it also, you know, with the sort of disaggregation of our system in the UK, in England in particular, it's all the more important that heads of music realise that there is something that is affordable to give their children a chance. So it's meant to be priced affordably. We can afford to do that. I hope that schools can afford to invest in that. And hopefully that gives more children a chance to start on that ladder to some form of musical career within their school life and maybe on afterwards.
That's fantastic. And Brian, thanks so much for chatting with us. I mean, I think we've got a really good understanding now about how it works and how to get in contact. And I think also how it can fit in a fabric of your musical life in a school as well. It's not a, it has to be like this, it has to be like that. I think it's part of a portfolio, as you said, of any kind of instrumental learning and any kind of music development. It really can sit with any of those things going on. And I think that's a really important takeaway for anybody that's listening at home. So, yeah, thanks very much for being on the show today.
Not at all. Thanks, Mark. You've been very kind.